Good morning, everyone. It is 10 a.m., March 27, 2024. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the North Dakota Public Service Commission, joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugen-Hoffert and Julie Fedorchek. So we have a quorum. Before we go into anything else, would you please join me in pledging our allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Haugen-Hoffert, do you?
Yeah, I do have one thing. April is just right around the corner, and with that, we have the governor proclaims Safe Digging Month in April. Tis a season that people will be out in the fields and eager to fulfill a New Year's resolution on doing maybe some yard work and all that. So it's very important that you know the call before you dig rules out there with landscaping or with farming or doing any type of excavation out there. So I'm just going to remind people the importance of call before you dig, safety first, and when in doubt, please call. That's all I have, Commissioner.
Good reminder. Commissioner Fedorchek.
Thank you. So I was out in Washington, D.C. yesterday speaking at the Electric Power Supply Association on behalf of NARUC. It's another organization that deals a lot with the power sector. Obviously, they're competitive power suppliers, and really had a great conversation with them about the efforts on gas-electric coordination, what still remains to be done on that, or what some of the big issues are. A lot of conversation about increasing demand, increasing load all over the country. How are we going to meet that? And the role that the markets play, and really just a lot of great discussion about the various roles that states, utilities, RTOs, FERC, everybody has a hand in this and how to make it work. And I, of course, emphasize the important role of state regulators in our efforts to help ensure that the plans be made for our power systems, the plans be made for the electric grids, that the power supplies that are on the electric grids in all the states that we are working in, that we are taking our time and doing our diligence in ensuring that the grids are reliable and affordable for citizens. And it was a great discussion. There was Jim Robb, the head of NERC, was there again, urging the need for slowing down on retirements. And he said, we need to start spitting things out, which the guy is a brilliant engineer, but he does have a knack for speaking in common language, which is helpful. But basically just getting things done. He's working a lot on inverter-based technologies and how to the new standards that need to be incorporated in that, and just like permitting and siting and all of those things. Just we need to start getting things done in order to not end up, you know, in a precarious situation. So he was there. And then the head of three of the nation's RTOs, not just like a top guy, the CEOs of New England, ISO, the NYISO, that's the New York's ISO, and ERCOT. They were all there talking about the challenges that they're seeing. And in Texas alone, they're expecting 25 gigawatts of new demand in 5 years. That he said that's the equivalent of an entire Houston being added to their grid in 5 years. So it's just fascinating to see how this industry is evolving, and it's just never been more important that commissioners are up to speed on what's going on, understand, have the technical knowledge, have staff that are engaged and are really just focusing like lasers on this whole issue of resource adequacy. And I did say, well, there that I think, you know, this isn't a NARIC position. This is a Julie Fedorchak position, but there should be a moratorium on retirements right now in this country because we just barely have enough power to meet the demand as it is today, much less if you start looking at all the data mining that is coming on so rapidly with artificial intelligence and the growth of that industry. So anyway, fascinating conversations. I urge you both to, you know, remain engaged both here but abroad as well, because we have an important role to play, a leadership role to play in this space throughout this transition. So that's it.
Okay. We have four items on the consent calendar. I move approval of those four items plus the previous minutes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, moving into the regular agenda then, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in True Connect Communications Incorporated, designated eligible carrier, application case number PU-24-88.
Second.
On February 28th of this year, True Connect Communications filed this application for designation as an ETC for the purpose of receiving federal universal support for low-income consumers under federal law. True Connect proposes to provide wireless services by reselling another carrier's facilities. The issues to be considered in this proceeding are whether the applicant is qualified, number one. Number two, what ETC universal service support area should be designated, if any. And number three, is designation of this applicant in the public interest. So people are invited to comment on this application in writing. Those desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. And those comments and requests for hearing will be received until May 10th. And I just want to emphasize that if appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
And I move the commission initiate case number AM-24-100 for the 2024 and 2025 sinkhole filling and maintenance AML project for reclamation of abandoned mine lands and Public Service Commission 2024-2025 sinkhole filling and maintenance AML project, case number AM-24-100.
Second.
So one part of this project is filling sinkholes that are caused by underground mine collapses in various locations around western North Dakota, kind of as needed. We have about a dozen different locations in mind, going all the way from up by Noonan to down by Bowman to over about by Turtle Lake. So it's quite a broad area there. The other part is maintenance work on former reclaimed surface mine projects. There's three of them in particular. One's by Noonan, one is just west of New Salem, and one is northwest of Mandan. That includes reclaiming erosional features and doing some reseeding work. All this work is expected to be conducted between July 1st of this year and the end of 2025. The AML division has funds to complete these projects and recommends project initiation, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Commissioner Hogan-Offer.
Thank you. I have six of them, so stay tuned. my first one, I move the commission adopt the order on electric service area agreement in Montana Dakota Utilities and Dakota Valley Electric Ellendale, North Dakota service area agreement, case number PU-23-272.
Second.
On July 20th, MDU and Dakota Valley filed a joint application for approval of the service area agreement to designate service locations to be served by MDU and Dakota Valley surrounding the Applied Digital Data Center located near the city of Ellendale, North Dakota. On the 16th of 2023, the commission did issue a notice of opportunity, and no responses were received. The notice identified the issues to be considered in the proceeding are whether the service area agreement complies with North Dakota Century Code, whether approval of the service area agreement is compatible with public interest. We did, on February 21st, commission discussed this matter with MDU during an informal hearing. And MDU and Dakota Valley has come to a service area agreement, and the applicants concur that the agreement will create the certainty necessary for both applications to apply and operate efficiently within the service territory they agreed upon. This will avoid any unreasonable duplication of electrical service and avoid any territorial disputes between MDU and Dakota Valley. Having considered this, and with the discussion of MDU and the agreement that both have come to, I support this application.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I'm going to support it, too, and I mean, you explained all the details well, but I just want to point out a concern that I have with this. Initially, when I looked at it, I thought it's a very large boundary change compared to what the new customer actually covers. Mm-hmm. And probably what I found most concerning was the fact that there are actually Dakota Valley customers now in the MDU territory. And, I mean, they have an agreement, which, I mean, I really advocated for them coming to one time a long time ago, and appreciate that the companies went to work and came to an agreement. I just wanted to throw this out there. I do get concerned if these agreements start to cover too much territory, and especially when it includes other customers that are still going to be served by the conceding territory, and if all of a sudden they want to do something that really expands their demand, does this open up another fight between the two companies? So just wanted to get that on the record of being kind of concerned about the size.
You know, Commissioner, I agree with you, and we had discussion with MDU during the informal about that as far as proximity. And I also question staff sometimes about adjusting this order, but where we're at with the service area agreement, either we accept it or we don't. I'm just going to say, to your point, I'm going to have strong hope that they work, that if Dakota Valley is in that area and already serving, but if it's economically better for Dakota Valley to serve that on their word that they will work that out.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you. I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement in Public Service Commission TTK Enterprise LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Numbers DM23-277 and DM23-304.
Second.
On July 27, 2023, and on August 30th, the commission received a North Dakota One Call complaint from Kidder Morgan. Each complaint alleges TTK Enterprises violated North Dakota Century Code by failing to contact the notification center. So I'll go through each case a little separately, but the same violation still occurs. When staff received a complaint, we notified the alleged company that's in violation. We did receive both times response from TTK, so they did work with staff, and we thank them for that. So on the first case, DM23-277, they allege that they did call the North Dakota One call before they began excavation because they were working in up in the Watford City area. In going through this case, there are many dates where they call in, they get a ticket, they call in, get a ticket, they extend it. But TTK had so many calls into one call, this is the one call that they did not have in upon further investigation. So when they did call, the work had already been completed. Therefore, they were in violation by not calling in specifically for this case. So on the other case, DM23-304, they were a subcontractor regarding the work that they were beginning for the purpose of supporting State Highway 85 road construction. Again, they called in. Again, there was no ticket for this specific excavation based upon investigation. So in both of these cases, when the staff worked on a consent agreement, is that they did not have a one-call ticket in for that, for this. So TTK is assessed a civil penalty of $1,000 with $500 suspended, that on the condition that they commit no further violation within 5 years, they shall remit the $500 civil penalty within 10 business days to us. In the event that the commission finds that they have violated further violations, that they will have to submit the suspended amount, and then any new violations, they will also be assessed penalties. So I support this consent agreement.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the order in Otter Tail Power Company 2024 Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Adjustment Factor Rates, case number PU-23-343.
Second.
Thank you. On November 2nd, 2023, Otter Tail filed an application to change its renewable cost recovery adjustment factor rider rate. We need to come up with new words. Wow. And so this rate recovers projected costs from April 1st, 2024 through March 31st, 2025. Of the repowers to Langdon, Ashtabula 1, Laverne, Ashtabula 3 wind projects. They were all upgrade projects and includes the Maricot wind energy projection tax credits. So on, also just, we've talked about this before, Otter Tail has also filed a rate case. And in that rate case, they propose to remove the costs for AmeriCorp and Ashtabula 3 from this rate, base rate recovery. So that is important to know. So we did issue a notice of opportunity and no requests were received. Applied, did file some comments, and then we also received a supplemental filing from Otter Tail Power. So just to go through this a little bit, what we were asking is their production tax, they were initially submitted it to be recovered within the first 10 years of the repowers, where it is the commission's practice to levelize those PTCs for the life of it, which is approximately 25 years. So what we asked Otter Tail is to do a supplemental filing looking at those production tax credits for the 25 years. So on their initial revenue requirement for the collection period, as the time period I stated, was $1.94 million, but because after levelizing this, it increased it to $2.85 million in addition to it. So when looking at this recovery period for those repowers, the production tax credits, as a result, a residential customer consuming 1,000 kilowatt per month would experience a monthly increase of approximately $1.68. So we find that with the supplemental filing and the normalization will really what we do for the PTCs, I find this acceptable and support it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I just want to take a moment to say kudos to either you as portfolio holder or staff. This got filed. A little time went by before I got to going through it. I think when this commission began levelizing those PTCs, it makes us a national leader in doing the right thing. And it's going to provide big benefits to North Dakota consumers in years to come as this surge of free money from the federal government for wind power, as those facilities start to age. Very much still believe that's the right thing to do. So when I read the initial application that they wanted to use it all up as it flows, I about blew my stack. And as soon as I went to staff, they said it was already being worked on and there's new filing coming. So to whoever else caught that, kudos, thank you, because we are doing the right thing with this levelization formula.
I was surprised by that too, that they filed it in that way, because we had quite an elaborate discussion about that, and it was just, I don't know if it was an oversight or if they just continued to think it's better to do it the other way, but anyway, yeah, I echo your applause.
And I will give credit where credit is due. I will give it to Rob Frank and the public utilities staff, so kudos to them. Thank you for recognizing the staff.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement in Public Service Commission Lund Oil Incorporated Weights and Measure Enforcement Case Number WM23-354.
Second.
Thanks, Julie. On November 15th, 2021, a inspector conducted an annual recertification test at the scales of Lund in Wofford City. During the inspection, the inspector identified that one of the platform scales was missing a poise screw and therefore was not weighing accurately, nor could be adjusted, zeroed out to weigh accurately without this piece of equipment. So the inspector rejected the scale and placed a red reject for repair tag on the device, which states commercial use of this device is forbidden until repaired and certified. After finalizing the inspection, the inspectors do meet with a representative from the company, and they go through the inspection report, and they leave a copy of the invoice, and they also sign a copy of the invoice, which indicates the inspector's records. So on May 10th, 2023, the inspector returned to conduct the recertification, and the inspector noticed that the tag was still on it, but they were using it. And again, the staff goes through the education to them, and they did remove it from usage. Then on August 23rd and November 29th, the inspector was traveling through the area and noticed that on both occasions, the rejected platform scale was back out in front. And again, the rejection for repair tag was still on it. Staff worked with the company regarding the rejected platform scale. They educated them that saying that this needs to be repaired before it is placed back in service. And again, they acknowledged it. On January 23rd, staff spoke with the company and they said it's been removed and is no longer being used. When asked why the rejected platform had been returned to the front after it had been removed, the company said an employee put it back up there. Later, they said that now the missing part was requested and the inspector was to come to inspect and certify the scale. On February 20th, the rejected platform scale was repaired and recertified by the inspector. So in reviewing this under our weights and measures, that once it is red tagged, it cannot be used, and they cannot remove that tag. So they violated that, that they kept bringing it back and using that. So in dealing with the company, and based upon the investigation, Lund violated knowingly using a rejected platform scale in commerce when they were refilling the propane tanks. So a consent agreement has been reached, and Lund is assessed a civil penalty of $250 payable to the North Dakota Public Service Commission within 10 business days. Just to clarify, when something has been taken out of service, well, you might think of the time period as being quite long. Recertification is annually not to exceed 15 months. So the inspector was in follow-up after the equipment was taken out of order because they hadn't received notice that it had been fixed. The inspector had did his due diligence on going back and seeing that it wasn't up for recertification yet and it was still being in violation. So I support the assessment civil penalty of $250.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Sherry, can you just walk through how many times were we out there and told them to, like, tagged it, told them not to use it, and then came back and it hadn't been fixed, and then it was being used again. How many times did that happen? Was it three?
Well, initially it was on November 15th. Okay, that's when it was initially inspected and taken out of service and discussed with, reviewed with the company.
In 2021?
Yep.
Okay.
Then on May 10th, 2023, this is where you have that annual and not to exceed 15 months.
Yep.
The inspector was out there again and talked to them and removed it.
So it hadn't been fixed?
Correct.
Was it in use at that point?
Yes.
Okay.
On August 23rd and November 29th, the inspector was traveling through the area and noticed that on both occasions, the rejected scale was back out in front and the tag was still on, still not fixed.
Okay, so it was three times that they took it, basically ignored the red tag, brought it back out.
Correct.
And put it back in service.
Correct. Now, in working with the staff, Conrad is here, regarding, I just said, for that time period, first we talked about the time period, but then about the penalty. And the weights and measures matrix that they use that is consistent is the assessment penalty. It's the same violation, so it's the $250.
If it was three violations, what would it be? What would the penalty be?
$250 per violation.
Okay. Well, I'm going to propose that we put the penalty at that level because it feels to me like three penalties. Or I don't know, maybe we just vote against this and that's my, or I vote against it, but that would be my recommendation because I don't think that $250 when you've brought a scale back out three times when it's been red tagged and not for commercial use, I don't think $250 is enough of a fine, personally.
You know, I concur, and when talking with Conrad about it, I said, you know, I asked for the matrix and went through it. We had a much deeper conversation, too, regarding are our fines appropriate when we talk about this and had a lengthy discussion. So I agree with you. I think this is something the commission needs to look a little bit further on regarding that matrix and assessing penalties. So I'll see where Commissioner Christman lies on this one.
I want to ask a question first, if you're done.
I am, yep.
Because I had actually red flagged this earlier, too, thinking that this was too low, that it seems they have really snubbed their nose at the importance of this program. But as far as like what I think it should be, this is where my question is. The August 23rd and November 29th of 2023 times, did we just drive by and notice it on the 23rd, but we're busy doing something else, so we didn't say anything to them, so they didn't realize really that they got caught? Or did we tell them then, and then came by in November, and then again they got caught? I'm not really sure what happened in August there.
I'm going to look at Conrad and say, the inspector was out in that area, stopped? Nope.
But he didn't tell them again that you've got to stop this. He didn't. Okay, so really they were told twice.
Twice. My apologies. It was my understanding that they stopped.
But even still, they did get red tagged. A year and a half went by. They were told to move it inside, even not just issued a second notice and then moved it back out there. And I think too it needs to be higher than this.
So actually it was four times, because then on January 23rd it was still being used.
But the August one, the
August and November they didn't stop, but they noticed it, if I'm understanding correctly. And then on January 23rd they stopped and spoke to him, and
that was my phone call.
Oh, you spoke to him, you didn't go out there. He said it had been pulled. Okay.
Well, I think what's important to know is when something is red tagged, when the initial inspection, the education that goes on, putting that tag on and saying it's out of use, and they sign off, they're acknowledging it.
Yeah. Well, I'd be open to, you know, if whatever you guys think, but I think there's justification for three or four times higher, but if we want to just do the times that it stopped and double it from that, I'd be fine with that.
I'm going to leave. I don't know, because it's not like we can just plug in a different number, because this references a consent agreement or a settlement or whatever the term is, and so it would have to be redone.
That's a good point.
And so I think we just probably need to reject this, and you know, you can work with staff. You've kind of heard the concerns here. And
yep.
I don't know that it needs to go to three or four times that much, but I think a good decision will be reached.
I agree.
Is there any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Oh. No.
Because there's no motion to reject, so it's just on the motion. Okay. I do not vote aye. Let's start the vote over, please.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Nay.
Nay.
Sorry. No, I followed it up.
We said nay.
The motion fails.
I just want to add a comment that if we're going to start down that, we're going to have to look at the bigger picture on our matrix on how it is, as you and I discussed, Conrad, and come up with a matrix regarding penalties and bring that before the commission.
And I did look at one somewhat similar case that had, you know, a pretty similar penalty, but the one that I looked at kind of had to do with kind of a leaky hose, and I think we view this program as, you know, safety too, and that we can reject things for safety issues. I think there are some in the industry who question that, and so that might not be as clear of a jurisdictional line as just the accuracy of a scale or gas pump or something, and so I think that's a factor too.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the, just to provide further thoughts while you guys work on this, there's different types of scales, smaller, medium, bigger. You know, I think that there could be some variance for those because the size of the volumes measured create mm-hmm. a bigger discrepancy if they're off. And then the other thing, I think, you know, the in this case, it you could have, it really wasn't a first violation when we go out there multiple times and it's not fixed. So there could be some sort of a recognition of that in the scale too, in the guidelines that you guys set.
Yep.
Thank you. We're all on the same page now. I move the commission assess an application fee of $10,000 and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Otter Tail Power Company, MDU Utilities Company, 345 KV Transmission Line, Jamestown to Ellendale, Public Convenience and Necessity, case number PU-24-91.
Second.
On February 29th, 2024, Otter Tail Power Company and MDU filed a joint application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to construct and own and operate approximately 85 miles of 345 kV transmission and expansion of four substations located in Stutzman, Lemoore, and Dickey counties. The issues to be considered in this proceeding are whether public convenience and necessity will be served by the construction and operations of the facility, and two, are Otter Tail and MDU technically, financially, and managerial fit to able to provide this service. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by May 10th, 2024. If deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a formal hearing. I just want to explain this one a little bit more because this is a unique with a joint filing. This project, we've been talking about congestion, and there's congestion down in that area. And this project was identified and approved by MISO as part of its long-range transmission planning Tranche 1 program. So MDU, and as indicated, and Montana will jointly own this transmission line in the expansion of several substations. They're looking at this project to be in service by the end of 2028, and the cost of this, just this alone, will be approximately $440 million. And in the application, they have lined out, I can go through who owns what, but a lot of this will be available in the docket as far as under their first one, but this is one of the projects that we've been talking about in the RTOs and things that they have identified where there's congestion and transmission. So we have the first filing of that to resolve that issue down in that area. So again, this is for a notice of opportunity. And if anybody wants, you know, regarding the hearing, they have until May 10th to submit.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I just say that this is for the public convenience and necessity portion. The siting portion isn't before us yet.
Is there any further discussion?
And I will just add on that note, one of the things that I'm going to be looking at in this case, for my own opinion, is when we talk about public necessity, are we talking about serving about our utilities serving our customers reliably and affordably? Is that what we mean by public necessity? Or is this about satisfying arbitrary goals by climate activists and investor groups and other state policymakers? I'm going to be giving that a lot of thought in this case.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the order in Montana Dakota Utilities Company Fuel Cost Monthly Adjustment 2024 Tariff Monthly Adjustments, case number PU-24-10.
Second.
On February 26th, MDU filed an application for approval of a tariff provision waiver allowing allowing the surcharge recovery over 24 months rather than the 12 month. We issued a notice of opportunity of hearing and no responses were received. We did meet with MDU during that informal hearing at the end of March. We've been talking about this issue with the congestion up in western North Dakota and MDU receiving costs, charges, regarding the result of the congestion up in northwestern North Dakota. MDU has filed a complaint with FERC in regards to the excess congestion costs, and they anticipate it taking 6 to 12 months, and because of that complaint, that's why the reason they filed the waiver, hoping that they're going to have a response from the FERC and get some money back, and therefore that be applied to the 13th to 24 month. So looking at this filing, specifies the impact of the proposed changes will result, looking at a total of this tariff to be $13.19, and how this increase includes two components, and I'm going to briefly go through them so people understand how they arrived at. The first component is the cost of fuel and purchase power, and also the surcharge. Those are the two components. The cost of fuel and purchase power is based on the average of the most recent 4 months of actual fuel and purchase power costs, and this contributes to the sum of $5.79. And then the second component, which I indicated, is a surcharge, which is the over and under balance of the fuel and purchase power for the prior 12 months. And this is the $7.42. So if you take the $5.79 and $7.40, you get the $13.19. So this increase is primarily attributable to the congestion costs. And so that is the tariff total amount of $13.19 in looking at approving the waiver from 12 months to 24 months.
We have a motion. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Go ahead, Randy.
Well, I agree with this motion and the description of it. I just want to kind of cover myself here in that this is kind of a different position than some different extensions we did a few years ago and the position I took on those. If you recall, after Storm Year, we do a similar, 1 year recovery thing on the natural gas costs. And after Storm Uri, they were very, very high, and we extended those out longer, and I was very opposed to that. And it actually worked out pretty well that we did that, in that there was not a big similar event the next year. So it did work in this case. I still think that that's dangerous and would vote against it again. In this case, though, I view this extension kind of differently. There is some reasonable likelihood of a fair amount of this money coming back, and that then by next year's renewal that could be eliminated from this charge. And so I think this is a, this has different circumstances than previous times when we've extended the 1 year time period.
Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, just briefly, because I think Randy and Sherry both did a great job talking about this, but I'll say, just to reinforce, so there's this amount of money that MDU believes it's paying and inappropriately and has filed to FERC to try to, and if they win at FERC, then and FERC grants them what they hope, that money will be refunded. The money is being charged in MDU's mind for through a tariff mechanism that isn't designed to fix a problem up there, but the mechanism designed, it can't possibly fix the problem. So that's why they're fighting this, and FERC saying this doesn't work, and so we shouldn't be paying for something that doesn't have the possibility of actually fixing the problem. So if they win that, they'll get it back. So if we didn't do this 24-month, if we charged it all right now, this balance, the increase would be like $18 a month versus $13.19 in total. And so what Randy and Sherry were just saying is, you know, because we're spreading it over the 24 months, we can keep the amount down so that in hopes that in 12 months, we won't have to have this anymore because we will have won in FERC. That's the hope. And I think I agree with Randy that there's a reasonable expectation that that'll happen. So if we went ahead and allocated or charged the full amount and we did win, then we'd have to, you know, refund money back. And so this seemed like the more clear way to do it.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That ends my portfolio.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you. I move the commission adopt the order in Rugby Wind LLC, Rugby Wind Farm, Pierce County Siting Application, case number PU-23-313.
Second.
So in 2005, this Rugby Wind Farm received a siting permit from the PSC for this 150-megawatt wind farm in Pierce County. In 2008, they reissued a certificate of site compatibility, I think just to a new name, Rugby Wind LLC. And then in September of last year, Rugby filed an application to repower up to 71 of the existing 2.1-megawatt turbines, replacing the 88-meter rotor diameter blades, hubs, and gearboxes with 2.2-megawatt turbines, and then 120-meter rotor diameter blades, hubs, and gearboxes. So this would increase the height from 407 feet to 480 feet. So they filed that in September, last September. We had we issued a notice of opportunity for hearing. We got a few different comments received from the public, from the State Historical Society. On December 13th, we had an informal with Rugby Wind, and several individuals from up there met with staff. Then we reissued a notice of opportunity for hearing because they had to change the project slightly, and the comments request for hearing were due by March 8th. Let's see. So we've heard from DEQ and SHPO on this project. I already outlined what the change will be, but let's see. The halfway through, the company realized that the replacement of the turbine nacelles and rotor blades required them to kind of upgrade the tower. So they had to add a tower adapter section to the tower that will allow the existing tower infrastructure to join with the proposed new equipment. So that's why we had to reissue the thing, because they changed it. So the existing 79-meter rotor hub height for each tower will increase to 85 meters. And the upgraded project's total nameplate generating capacity will increase from 156 up to 156.2 megawatts from 149, and their limit at the point of interconnection is 147 megawatts. They have requested that we amend the order limiting the output to 147 or 150, and so that's included in this to eliminate that cap. Let's see. They're using all of the existing turbine foundations with reinforcement if needed. The collection and communication systems will be the same with upgrades as needed. All the access roads in the project substation will be the same. Due to the increased blade height, the total turbine height, tip height will be 146 meters, 480 feet. The upgraded project activities will occur wholly within the original site designated by the commission. They did have to receive some waivers. So one turbine did not meet the current exclusion area of 1 1/10 the height of the turbine from the property line of a non-participating landowner. They've obtained a waiver from that landowner for that. The Pierce County Board of Commissioners acknowledged it with a variance and approved the upgraded project. They needed a variance from the local setbacks from their roadways on a few turbines, four different turbines impeded on that, and they received that waiver. They also exceed the 45 decibel limit within 100 feet of 9 occupied residences. Rugby has obtained waivers from 8 of the affected residences. And they'll obtain the final one, or else they will operate the turbines at a lower electrical and sound output mode so that they stay within the tolerance of that within the final residence that they impact. The shadow flicker assessment was re-evaluated, and they will not exceed the 30 hours per year at any of them except for one, and they obtained a waiver from that residence. Let's see. The removal of the turbine components will be handled, processed, treated, stored, reused, disposed of, or recycled in accordance with pertinent federal, state, and local regulations. And the commission is requesting that they update us on their final process for disposal. The upgraded project is currently operating with the aircraft detection lighting system. And subject to FAA approval, they will continue to use that system on the upgraded project. So with all of that evaluation in place and the collaboration between staff and some of the local residences, there's a couple contingencies in the order. One is that they have to obtain the final waiver for the sound limits or else stay within the required decibel limit at that sound by how they operate at that sound level. And then they have to complete an architectural and archaeological survey for the upgraded project as requested by SHPO. And they can't begin construction until it obtains and files with the commission a letter from SHPO concurring that there are no architectural projects or properties or resources affected by the project. And with that, I think this order is ready to go. Good job to Rob Frank on staff for following this one. There was a lot of details on this that needed to be attended to, and I think that they've all been covered, so great job to our staff for following through with all of those details.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That's it for me.
What? Concludes our regular agenda items. A couple of announcements that I would like to make. This afternoon, we have an informal hearing regarding IM Telecom, another eligible carrier applicant. On this coming Monday, on April 1st, we have our RTO updates that we do from time to time. We'll have SPP coming in at 9 o'clock and MISO coming in at 1:30. Our next regular commission meeting is 2 weeks from today, April 10th at 10 a.m. With that, we will stand in recess, take some questions from the press, and then reconvene later for the administrative portion of our meeting. But for now, we are recessed.